Well, hello, and welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. Join me, Sam Harris, on my journey of curiosity and growth. I have conversations with some of the world's most fascinating humans, from billionaires to Olympians, and most everyone in between, such as suspiciously happy people and even a hitman. Success isn't just for successful people, it is earned and you can earn it too. I find out how ordinary people become extraordinary to fuel your own growth mindset. Welcome to the Growth Mindset Podcast. It's my pleasure to have you here.
Thank you.
Today we have Richard Hall, the CTO of Cocoon, and it's a really cool app and headphones that basically changes your life with how you sleep and goes into your brain and sort of measures what's going on and plays great sounds to optimize your sleep patterns and helps you with traveling. And it's a really, really cool piece of technology, which is why it's very exciting to have the CTO of the company here to talk a bit more about the technology and how they built it. So firstly, Richard, I like to ask my guests about their life story. So could you give me a bit of a breakdown in like 3 minutes?
Okay. The potted history is, you know, grew up, two brothers, I have a twin brother, went to uni, studied general engineering, specialized in electronics information. Alongside that, my passion is probably football and playing guitar. And yeah, worked as an electronics design engineer for about 5 years before jumping on board the Cocoon bandwagon or starting the Cocoon journey. So I've been doing the kind of exciting startup thing since 2015. So that was less than 3 minutes. So.
Yeah. Plenty of things to go into straight away. So firstly, what's it like having a twin?
Yeah, when I talk about the twin thing, it's cool, obviously, kind of playing music together, playing football together growing up. But equally, our little brother is kind of into those things as well. So we've had a lot of fun growing up. And bring this to Cocoon, he was one of our first employees within Cocoon as well. So my twin brother. So that's a whole other interesting...
I can imagine that'd be confusing for people.
I think it was a bit confusing. Yeah, we had some good fun and games when people would come into the office. And poor old Mike would be sat there kind of coding away and someone would, you know, come and start talking to him that knew me. So there's a lot of fun and games with that. But yeah, it was good. From the sibling relationship element, Mike did 3 years working at Cocoon. And by the end of that, I think we were pretty happy that our relationship as brothers was still surviving, me being his boss, etc. But yeah, it was a great experience and we're still best of friends now. So
cool. I'm really into like body hacking, these kind of things. It just seems like you must have so much potential to like experiment with things and be like, if I do this much like homework when you do like much less, do we still get the same grade? And like, you can optimize things.
The answer is no, we don't still get the same grade. So we're quite different in personality. In some ways, we're very different. In some ways, very similar. But I don't know whether that's because we grew up together, then kind of on purpose, we developed quite individually, so to have our own identities. But he's bit more kind of loose and free in his thinking, and I'm a bit more kind of controlled and planned.
Did you feel that kind of, because when you try to explain what it's like to have a brother or sister, someone that's like an only sibling, it's kind of hard for them to sometimes conceptualize, but I imagine it's almost like another level above that of like someone that kind of is there every single moment.
It's a bit, yeah, we do have, I would say, almost telepathic. If we're observing, I'll know exactly what he'll find funny and vice versa, and he can make me laugh harder than anyone. But yeah, in terms of understanding each other's sense of humor and stuff like that, is at a very close level, I guess. It's nice to reflect, actually, but yeah, I think I'm pretty lucky.
Okay. Then your other passions, guitar and football, you put like a lot of time into those? Or they just always been like side hobbies?
I love playing my guitar. I was never very diligent. It never took me long to kind of learn enough to kind of get by when I was playing in bands and stuff. So I never kind of pushed it to the point where I was kind of really good. And I kind of, in more recent years, I kind of switched, let's say, to playing bass because I found it was kind of a bit more in line with how much time I had to commit to it. Actually, one of the nice things about Cocoon is there is that musical element to it.
And the same with football, that was like always just like a side hobby.
That was my deepest passion was probably football. I just loved playing football, absolutely loved it. And then got a bit of an annoying knee injury, so I've had to kind of cut that back a bit. But I still watch football and kind of follow it and et cetera, and look back very fondly of my days when I had two good knees and I could run around after football. With supporting football clubs as well, I kind of sometimes, I'm a bit standoffish, so I'm a Chelsea fan. I should probably shouldn't say that, but sometimes I'll be quite into supporting them. Then other times I kind of not so much. Mainly when we're losing, obviously. But I'm a much better fan when we're winning stuff. Yeah.
Cool. But yeah, so in terms of Cocoon, what was the pitch that Tim first came to you with then to get you involved?
He came to me with this idea of wanting to make a headphone someone could sleep in. And yeah, and that was basically it. And if you put a problem in front of an engineer, you know, they're going to want to try and solve it. That's all he really had to do. You know, combined with the fact that he'd saved a bit of money to kind of fund the first few months of the startup. And yeah, and I liked the idea. That was the main thing that I thought was, if you could make a headphone that was comfortable to sleep in, then obviously that's something the world could do with. So yeah, that was where I was very interested. Yeah, and kind of decided to join the mad adventure.
Yeah, fair. So did you have any idea in the like road plan at that point that you'd be kind of going into EEG?
So the idea for Tim came from the fact he'd struggled. So he working in the city in London, obviously, you know, stressful presentations, etc. He'd be delivering and, you know, couldn't sleep basically. Wanted a set of headphones to sleep in and that didn't exist. So that was the crux of the drive. And we started really just looking at, you know, the obvious things around, okay, so it's a headphone, we need to make this more comfortable for side sleeping in especially. And then we started looking into more of the music side and more of a kind of sleep sensing side of things, which is quite early on as well. The kind of EEG came into it.
Cool. That's interesting. And then how did you guys sort of work out what the pitch was to people to sell it? And when did you first make sales?
Well, the first people we really pitched to were Hacks, who are a hardware product accelerator based out in Shenzhen. And yeah, so we essentially, at that point, it was an ultra low profile over a headphone. Tim had done a lot of 3D printing of kind of prototype parts. So we had some kind of cool prototyped ear cups. And really, let's say, kind of the electronics was more in very nascent kind of sketch form at that point, or just kind of ideas, really. And yeah, so the pitch was way different to where we're at now. Obviously, we're kind of 5 years further down the line with a lot of, you know, expert input, etc. But it was still loosely the same. It was still about a sleep headphone, playing audio to help you relax and sleep. And it was always an ANC headphone. So the kind of noise blocking was always potentially a bigger part of it than it is now. But I don't know, maybe not.
I mean, it seems to do a lot of noise blocking at the moment.
Yeah.
I
just mean probably more in terms of differentiating technologies. ANC is a established technology that we use and others are very active in developing, whereas we're probably more focusing on the comfort and the kind of sensing and audio, you know, kind of trying to understand this connection between audio for relaxation and sleep.
Yeah. So how have you gone around finding that? As in, when you first started putting like sensors in the headphones, what was it that you were finding, and how did you work out what to play at the right time to kind of have the right response?
Interesting. I think so. With audio for sleep, it's very personal. So everyone's kind of different. Earlier, we were talking about our own musical preferences. So I think what we discovered quite early, and actually if you look to other app-based products that were doing audio for relaxation and sleep, is it's all about giving the user choice and an ability to choose what they think might help them. And actually that idea is really one we're kind of running with and exploring further in this product. So yeah, it was more about trying to collect a large body of high quality audio that could cater for different needs, essentially. So we would have a lot of users that might consider themselves insomniacs or be mild insomniacs that might be looking for kind of CBT based spoken word exercises, to the lower end of the spectrum for a user like myself who just might want the odd kind of soundscape or something like that.
Yeah, a lot of stuff. So as in, people will fall asleep with people being talking at them then?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, I was going to say, like, my mum has pretty much never managed to make it through a whole David Attenborough like episode ever.
She falls
asleep.
Well, my mum always, I think that was one of the, say, things I knew before going to Cocoon, was I always remembered my mum would always fall asleep in front of CSI Miami or whatever it was, I can't remember. But I'd go up the stairs and turn the TV off. And I was like, So I kind of always understood that And that's a very interesting, or, you know, for Cocoon, it's one of the very interesting things that we're exploring is around, if someone's struggling with distractions or their mind wandering, what's distracting enough that it helps them kind of switch off, but not so distracting, obviously, that it kind of awakes whatever other worries or, you know, things you don't want to happen when you're trying to sleep. So this whole piece around kind of distraction level, because then the other notion you might come to with a product like this is, well, would you ever figure out the optimum piece of audio? I.e., with our system, we've seen this piece of audio really always helps people sleep. If someone listened to a piece of music or a piece of spoken word content, you know, if they listened to that three times on the bounce, they'd start getting pretty bored pretty quickly. So then this is the whole challenge around, actually, you've got to come up with a piece of audio that's going to help be at the right distraction level. And also, you've got to keep changing that piece of audio before it gets too boring. And you've got to react to the varying states that the user is coming to the product in as well.
Yeah. Yeah, it's interesting. I had one friend at uni who literally every night would listen to the same Sigur Rós album to fall asleep. Didn't do. But another friend who I stayed the night with, and she always listens to just different Harry Potter. Like, doesn't really care which chapter it is, but any of the Harry Potter books with Stephen Fry reading them, you just stick that on to go to bed with. And
I mean, he has got a magical voice.
Yeah,
to be fair,
yes,
that's interesting. So, but she would cycle through different passages of Harry Potter.
Yeah, I think she would generally kind of listen in a sort of sequence, but like wasn't too bothered because she kind of knew them all quite well anyway, and was like, it's just nice. Yeah.
But it's an interesting one as well, because, I mean, do you listen to music when you're working?
I've made like a coding playlist now. It's quite nice. It works quite well. It almost sort of forces me to be more focused, because I've got used to the fact that I'm always focusing when I'm listening to this music. It makes me know that I'm not going to be checking my phone when I have this music on, kind of thing. But otherwise, I kind of find it a bit distracting.
So for focus, I have my different albums that I listen to. And it's kind of interesting that I will maybe focus, or I'll explore one artist and I'll listen to a lot of that artist in phases. And then once I start getting a bit bored of that, I'll kind of shift to something else. But then I'll still occasionally go back to that artist. So it seems, so this kind of personal preference and familiarization is an important factor, because it doesn't necessarily mean once you get bored of something, it doesn't mean that won't become interesting.
Yeah, you found much difference between men and women on this, because I know, like, I did some DJing and women love like familiar music, whereas men are much more alternative on average. So like, men will spend a lot more time listening to new music, whereas women just kind of like charts.
Oh, interesting. We do track gender, but we haven't kind of run, let's say, experiments or queries yet. We've been kind of focusing a bit more on the different, you know, cohorts in a kind of quite nascent manner. So I'm trying to think, I don't have too many interesting statistics I can hit you with, but yeah, in terms of men and women, we haven't really been focusing too much.
So what are like the cohorts that you found making a difference?
Well, when you log into our app, we ask a bunch of questions. Some are around the severity of the sleep issue you might have, and others are around what it is that might be causing you to have issues sleeping or relaxing, and then other questions around what symptoms might be. And so it's quite top level stuff, but for example, with regards to what do you think would be causing you to have issues relaxing, is it kind of light disturbance, noise disturbance, is it stress, various other things? It's quite a limited list, maybe kind of five or six things. But so we then use that, because the way we're looking at what kind of audio is working for people, we're kind of very interested to know what our user perceives as the issue.
But as in, from those cohorts, you kind of find that, like, okay, if someone's suffering with stress, they'll probably all tend towards this type of like audio.
So there is that element to it. It would be more around the effectiveness we'd be looking at. So not so much popularity, but actually for these users that have said, you know, they struggle or they find stress is preventing them from sleeping well, then it turns out that it's these types of audio seem to be being most effective. We're more trying to get to what is it about these bits of audio that's working for these people. But also as a whole as well. I mean, it's not just about what's better for this person and that person. It's also what's better for everyone.
For sure. Has there been any like really surprising things that you found?
There's lots of really interesting stuff we're looking at right now, but we're doing a bit of work to validate the kind of credibility of our findings. we have like quite a big complex system, and it's not all completely validated and tested to the level we'd like. But for sure, we see trends where obviously certain types of audio are performing much better at helping people relax and sleep. So it's very exciting data. It's just we can't quite publish it yet, basically. There's a responsibility to be kind of scientific and thorough in what we're doing. And we want there to be, you know, good credibility behind what we're doing. So, yeah. Hopefully, I think, you know, what I can say is there is really interesting stuff there. And, you know, we do hope to start, you know, through our blog and through our app, of course, we hope to really start feeding this back to our users. We do at the moment give a kind of an effectiveness score in the audio library so users can see, you know, kind of graphically what's working better. So there is stuff there, but it is all a bit early stage.
Yeah. How do you know that it would be right for some people? Because I'm pretty sure it's not right for everyone. As in like the headphones, as in...
It's a very personal thing at the end of the day. I think people that, you know, are already wearing headphones to sleep in, for example, it's pretty likely a more comfortable headphone is going to be great for you. I think, yeah, for some people, it's going to come very much down to the individual and what they're, you know, what they're looking to get out of the product. But we're aware it's not a product for absolutely everyone, yeah, for sure.
Have you had a lot of issues with people that you kind of were maybe too good at sales initially and then people kind of bought it with the wrong assumptions and stuff?
So the product changed a lot in the early years. So we launched it on Kickstarter in 2015 and what we actually made was very different. Although we were still trying to build to a lot of the same objectives, even though we managed that as best as we felt we could. Or obviously there was some disappointment from customers there. But I think right now at the end of the day, you know, there's lots of videos, there's, I think, you know, accurate view of what the product is and what the product does. It's a new product and people are buying it direct online before being able to kind of try it. So there's always going to be an element of risk there. Being positive about it, thankfully, we get far more happy customers than we do people that end up I guess a little...
It's probably people that kind of already know that it should work for them.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah. And again, I think it depends exactly what your expectation is. But I think if you're using that headphone to relax, to help you get to sleep, I think it's a no-brainer that it's going to work pretty well. If you're looking to sleep right the way through the night with an over-ear headphone, which essentially it is, that's not going to be for everyone. But for a lot of our customers, it is. It does come down to really that individual user.
Yeah. Cool. So how did you go about getting the manufacturing? So you're like an electronic engineer. Did you kind of build everything yourself as a prototype and then work out how you could get it manufactured at scale, or did some of them just sort of provide the expertise on different things? Because the headphones now are amazing.
There are multiple tactics. We did a bit of a hybrid, which was one of the reasons it took us so much time, but we wanted to kind of maintain control of the electronics. Our engineers were all kind of UK design consultancy based folks that weren't so experienced, including myself, in like mass produced electronics. So we assembled our engineering team in the UK, built better prototypes, but these weren't manufacturable prototypes. So we say, you know, the phase of converting a prototype to a mass producible design is designed for manufacture. We basically chose our factory after talking to a lot of factories. And then actually this kind of DFM or design for manufacture phase, we did kind of with them, which actually was quite slow because we would design a bit and do a bit and then they might test it or get some stuff prototyped. But we were kind of working together in unison with a factory, which we needed to do because we put a lot of innovation, new ideas into the headphone. And if you'd have just let a factory run with that, they'd have just turned it into a normal headphone. But a kind of faster way of doing things, I think, is after your in-house development design prototyping phase, you kind of understand what you want the product to look like and how it needs to work and what bits are critical in the design. But then actually the job is to communicate that to a manufacturing expert in wherever they are and let them turn that into a mass produced product. Essentially what happened is we took on a lot of kind of DFM work, a lot of ourselves, where actually there were a lot of good people that work in these factories that could have done could have done it much quicker than us. So yeah, we made a few learnings, but equally it's quite nice now because actually doing it the hard way, you do learn a lot.
Cool. Do you think you're going to have more products come out that are kind of in the same space?
We are working on one right now. We're working on an in-ear version of the product, and we're currently kind of testing. We're just at the kind of, let's say, prototyping phase.
Yeah,
moment, so quite early.
They have
phase.
Less sensing then, or less-
it'll have different. So it won't have EEG in it, but we're using a kind of pulse oximeter, so flashing LED type sensor.
Yeah, so kind of like a heart rate for the blood in your ear kind of stuff.
Right.
Cool.
But we're looking, I think in the future, hopefully for me, we'll be able to bring EEG back in, but we were kind of looking not to take on too much technical development and slow ourselves down, focusing more on getting the concept or getting the first product out in the market, which it will be different to the over-ear headphone, but I think certainly will be more comfortable for some people. So,
I imagine.
So it's taking up a lot of our time at the moment as well. But yeah, inventing new stuff, and we're testing a lot with our current customers we're using to kind of test our prototypes and stuff.
Yeah. Oh, cool.
Yeah.
Nice. And then I guess it's quite interesting to see, has there been anything that's gone like majorly wrong, or moments where you're like, oh, I'm not sure if this is going to work?
Yeah, all the time. In terms of, do you mean just generally across?
Yeah, like I guess two different. As in one, that is the general business where you've been like having kind of doubts of like if there was any point in.
Not with the business. I think the mission is so strong, right, to help the world sleep and relax better. I think that's.
But then,
all
like, worry that you wouldn't be able to do it yourselves. Perhaps
it's never been that we couldn't do it ourselves. I mean, there's always been pressure around how long it would take us. So I think the kind of standard cost, quality, time pressures of bringing a great product to market, the daily struggle. And we've hit bumps along the way, for sure.
Do you think it's going to be a bit kind of like the Tesla model of come out with really expensive stuff first that people really, really, like, your really engaged users will go for, and then like it'll become more mass market, like you'll make it cheaper and cheaper?
At the end of the day, we're really trying to help, you know, build a product for around sleep and relaxation, and it has to be a great hearable. Yes, we're early stage, and yes, our initial products will probably be a little bit pricier than what you might expect for comparative hearable products in the market. $299 USD, I think, on $299 GBP as same. Well. So it's an expensive headphone. Actually, in the world of headphones, it's actually reasonably priced compared to other.
Same as like the good Bose ones and things.
Yeah, exactly. So, but I think with our in-ear, we'll be looking to bring that into more of a mass market bracket. For sure.
Okay, anyway, back to things that have gone wrong. So what are the things that have gone wrong?
Recently, we had an issue with our back-end server, and it took us a long time to get to the bottom of it. So it's not even in the kind of software systems as well. It's not always quick bug fixes. But yeah, I think in the hardware side, it's often more obvious what's going on. I think in software, it comes to light as something's frozen or a loading bar or just stuff's not happening. Whereas in hardware, it can be like bits of plastic snapping, stuff looking really terrible, ANC squealing is something that can happen as well. So ANC is quite tricky. You have to control it very tightly in manufacture, and we had some issues there as well. So yeah, but in terms of, let's say, things going wrong, it's developing hardware can be the things that will really give you nightmares.
Yeah. I mean, I was a bit surprised because of, you kind of mainly see about the headphones, and then, but it's a whole world that comes with the app and the whole relaxation. It's not even just sleep.
One of the things we're trying to figure out is how we better position the product around actually kind of a lot of the core value. Even though obviously the hearable products we're creating are great, but actually a lot of the value for our customers is in the audio as well.
Yeah. I mean, it's really good to over deliver on what you're promising, but it's also, there's something else you could be like talking about and sort of selling as a thing, because it is you're kind of doing that.
No, that's useful feedback. But yeah, and it's kind of something we are tussling with. It is all being involved in product design. It have to have a good, really, the marketing message and the product have to be very closely linked.
You definitely don't want to be selling the wrong thing to people.
One thing I thought was interesting anyway was I listened to a podcast. If people are interested in kind of music and sleep, I listened to a podcast on, it was the Sleep Junkies podcast. It was called Music and Sleep, where they interviewed Thomas Dixon. That was interesting, and kind of goes a bit deeper into where the cutting edge research is in kind of, you know, sleep and music at the moment. If people were interested to find out a bit more, that's quite cool.
Okay, what sort of stuff does that go into? And just like how it affects your brain and different.
So literally, I think Thomas Dixon had done a kind of a review of all the studies that had been done looking at different elements around whether it was entrainment, distraction level, the impact on the kind of personalization or personal taste impacts, and then studies that look at the difference between music and audiobooks, and also studies that look at masking, so blocking out sound via masking technologies. And the evidence shows that, you know, music does really help people sleep. But there was, I think one of the interesting findings was it seemed to be that music more than audiobooks, that I think what the studies were starting to show was it was a bit like going to the gym, where if you listened to music regularly, that actually improved sleep quality over time. Whereas kind of sleeping with audiobooks didn't necessarily have as good an effect on sleep quality over time. Yeah. I thought it was a really interesting podcast anyway. It's worth a listen.
Have you done much studies into like sleeping drugs? I'm guessing a lot of people who are willing to pay £200 for some headphones that might help them sleep probably try drugs as well.
I mean, that was one of our cornerstones of being a non-drug kind of solution.
Yeah, it's a great thing if you don't want to be using drugs, if it works.
Exactly. But that was one of our initial pitches, to be a kind of natural way to help people, to help people sleep.
But have you sort of seen the differences between people that use drugs and like what that does to their EEG and stuff?
It's not one of the things we try and, we don't ask users whether they're using drugs, and we haven't really done studies. Mm. So one of the other things I was looking to mention was we are working with Dr. Simon Merritt, who's our chief science officer, and he's a kind of sleep medicine consultant. So he sends us a lot of literature on sleep. And so we do see some of that come in. And I believe drugs do have a rather large impact on people's EEG and physiology, I guess, pretty obviously. But it's not something we tend to really focus on or deal with too much.
Okay, cool. All right. Then have you got any major take-homes for people from your life or...
The one thing I should probably say is, so just before Cocoon, I got married and over this 5 years I had kids as well. So my one major take home would be try not to put your wife through quite so much trauma by being a bit of a negligent father and husband at times. I think especially in the early days of Cocoon, it was tough. So I think we've learned that one. And then I think the other thing is, I had to learn early on it can all get a bit too much. I think sometimes at the end of the day, you have to put things in perspective. And I've been there where you're kind of developing a product for sleep and relaxation and you're kind of moaning about being really stressed and everyone's like, well, you know, just use your product. There's always that kind of contradiction between trying to do something that is probably quite stressful. So I guess one of the learnings is try and do what you're kind of selling and switch off your tech a couple of hours before you go to bed, try and get a good night's sleep. You know, I write little worry lists. If I have put the worries to one side and treat yourself well.
Nice. That's a good tip. Yeah. Cool. Thanks. Okay, then what is one of your earliest memories?
Early memories. I think I remember digging a bit of a mud pile in the back garden when I was younger, probably. I don't know why that comes to mind. Yeah, maybe my first bike. Maybe when I was five, probably, and cycling around the back garden. I don't know. Yeah, but yeah, digging mud and cycling.
It relates to building your product stuff.
Yeah, maybe. I was digging a new drainage. I've got to put some guttering on my shed and had to dig a soak away up the weekend. So maybe that's why it came to mind.
Oh, cool. So you live like quite far out of town?
Yeah, well, I live nearer Cambridge. So back to the hub.
That's great.
Yeah, I love Cambridge. So was... my first design job was there, and then went to uni there as well. So yeah, fun. And actually grew up in the Fens, really, but Cambridge was one of my close cities. So it's good.
It's better than living here permanently, especially for the weekends.
It's nice being out in the countryside. Yeah, I can literally pop out of my house and I'm kind of in fields. It's a bit like Animals of Farthing Wood, but you're probably too young, I don't know. But that was an old thing. But there's, you know, you go out for a jog and see kind of foxes and random. There's a lot of partridges as well, which are horrible because they kind of squawk and they don't kind of run away until you're really close.
Nice. Yeah, I'm from the middle of nowhere. That's why I don't like London on the weekends.
Right, yeah.
I'm not one of these people from cities.
Yeah, because we only lasted a few years in London, especially with the kids. But actually, it is lovely being in the countryside. I can smugly say that.
Cool. What's the kindest thing someone has ever done for you?
Ooh. It's got to be the family. I mean, yeah, parents, being good parents, you know, parents, wife, putting up with me. It's probably the kindest thing. Yeah. My mates for taking the piss. Yeah, you need. I think you need people to keep you on earth.
Keep your
feet firmly on the ground. Yeah. What about you?
Yeah, I don't know about kindest thing exactly. It's in obviously those are things my parents have done, but then like parents are kind of more likely to do that, I guess. So it's interesting to think more like random acts of kindness where someone has like no reason to do this thing and it's just like, oh wow.
Yeah. Doesn't happen often, does it?
Because yeah, not a lot, but sometimes.
I saw some guy today as I was getting off the tube at Moorgate offered to carry some bags.
Yeah, when I was on crutches for like a month in London, like literally people were always standing up in the tube for me and stuff.
Yeah.
It was even when I like didn't even need it and was just like, well, I'm only here for one stop and I can't actually be asked to walk over there to take a seat. And it's like, oh, this is awkward. I guess I'll come sit. Oh, and now I've stood back up again and I'm leaving. Well, thanks, mate. But no, it was nice. There's quite a lot of nice people in London.
Yeah, I think so. People, I think given the opportunity to be kind, people often
definitely.
Are,
one of the things is in I was talking to someone about kindness is in you can kind of be grateful for the fact that you can be kind because you have something to give, but you can also be grateful for the fact that people are like giving you the opportunity to be kind because often like people don't give you the options and lots of people are perfectly able to do nice things when the opportunity is there.
Yeah.
People don't really like present it. And you think like, oh yeah, I'll always take some money off someone. Like people can always be kind to me, but it's more like deeper than that. And it's a bit weird to just randomly accept stuff off people.
Do you think, does that link to accepting help as
yeah,
well?
Yeah. And like, why don't we just admit that we have problems sometimes? Yeah. And I'm sure sometimes I feel a bit lonely and down or something. And someone could be really kind to me if I made them aware.
Yeah.
But like, I don't really want to admit to that kind of thing. And actually, I need to sort of give people the opportunity to do that more.
Yeah, no, it's a very good point. It's something, I mean, yeah, I definitely say I struggle. It's kind of, yeah, fiercely, I guess we're all kind of can be quite fiercely independent at times and try and be capable and do everything. But sometimes it's quite hard just to, yeah, say you need a bit of a hand. And
yeah, definitely. It's usually like you kind of just go a bit too far when doing things and you're fine for quite a long time. You kind of don't realize that you're sort of like the whole road runner going off the cliff. He goes quite far like in midair before he's like, oh, I've gone too far. You definitely do that with stuff, I think.
You
kind of used to get away with it. You're like, actually, I've been doing the wrong thing for like quite a long time. Shit.
Yeah, because I think as well, like, if someone said, what's the last kind of thing I did? I was kind of thinking, well, I occasionally buy the guys croissants and stuff like that. But then I always have one of those croissants, so it's probably not that kind, really.
Maybe it's sort of like just signaling that you're kind of being nice and you want people to like you more and stuff. And
So maybe that's a good challenge. Maybe I'll try and do something kind.
It's always a good challenge. It's nice. It's fun.
But something kind that doesn't directly reward me. That can be my extra task for the year.
Nice. Well, it's been my pleasure having you on. And keep in touch, great. I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, thanks for having me. And thanks for listening.
I hope you enjoyed the episode as much as I did. My goal for this podcast is to help make people happier and wiser. And I'm also working on a few other projects in the podcasting space to achieve the same thing. I run the Wiser Than Yesterday podcast with a friend, where we read and discuss a great nonfiction book a week. Talk about things like philosophy, psychology, the economy, self-improvement, and business. Books such as The Black Swan, Anti-Fragile, Invisible Women, How to Win Friends and Influence People. It's a great resource. I also run the Curious Comforts podcast, finding out what's going on in the world and how to improve it with industry insiders. We've been focusing on the effects of the coronavirus lately, but I also discuss broader things like climate change and AI. Most recently, I've been building an app, Syncify. It's really to level up your podcast experience. You can connect with your friends in the app and listen to the same things. So you can listen live in real time with each other or create shared playlists and catch up at your own pace. You learn so much more by discussing ideas with friends. It's really silly to listen alone. You can also discover and share brilliant episodes with ease without having to try and recommend podcasts in different apps and just it all getting lost and confused. So it's also good for combating isolation and mental health. I personally find social media quite antisocial and I just don't find it easy to reach out to friends to chat for no real reason. But I do love doing things with other people and listening to the same content means that I can naturally talk about the same things, and it just gives me that friend time without going out of my way. So I really hope that it can help you, and I just would love you to try out the beta version and help us build this. And obviously, do invite your friends. It's all about friends. So you can find out more about Syncify app by going to syncifyapp.com. Thanks for listening. Congratulations on listening to a whole episode of the Growth Mindset podcast. Before you race into another podcast, try pausing. Ask yourself, what have you learned? What could you change? How will you make that change happen? Did you press pause? Knowledge is useless without action. What did you learn? What should you change? And how will you make that change happen? You can tell us what you learned by contacting us through the website, growthmindsetpodcast.com, and feel free to connect with us or our guests, or just peruse the show notes. Our Instagram is @growthmindsetpodcast, or follow me @samjamsnaps for a daily reminder to stop using Instagram. If you enjoy random acts of kindness and want to support the show, you can support us on Patreon or leave us a review on iTunes, and you'll make me very happy. And with that, keep learning and keep growing.